Welcome to Who's Talking. This is DG Martin. Well, think about this. You divorce your spouse, you marry somebody else, and you take your new one on a honeymoon, and in the next room is your old divorced spouse honeymooning with the new spouse. And that's the story of the Playmakers' current production of Noel Coward's classic play, Private Lives. It's a favorite for many years. And we've got the actors and the director of this production to come tell us about it. And so, first of all, welcome to Sean Daniels, who's the director of Private Lives, and you brought some of your actors with you. Sean, you want to introduce them to us, or and tell us what they do?
Or they can introduce themselves, because they're really charming people.
All right. Well, first of all, let's go. Julie, we know you. Julie Fischel, the last time I saw you, you were dressed up like a boy. I mean, like a man, and now you're this beautiful, sexy socialite.
That's very true. I had facial hair in the last role. it's a total 180 from Prospero and The Tempest. It's, in fact, when I was doing Prospero, I had a fitting for this play, and it was amazing because, you know, I'd spent a lot of time working physically to develop the aggression of Prospero and the maleness sort of side of him. So, you know, to go in and put on these 3-inch heels and, you know, these stunning gowns, and was quite wonderful, you know, because, you know, at bottom, it's, you know, always working on a character. In essence, gender is just one part of a character. And so this was a great exercise for me in the end. It's kind of wonderful to step so broadly from one type of role to the next that's so, you know, very different, to kind of find how both of them really sit in me.
You're trying to find out who you are now.
I guess so. I mean, I guess, you know, if casting's any clue, I'm somewhat schizophrenic.
Tell us about your character in Private Lives. You're one of the former marital pairs that has divorced, and you've now married somebody else. And
yes,
not right. Tell, what's your name in the play?
I play Amanda Prynn, and she's. I could see you sort of fishing around for one of the older couples, so it's fine. Yes, we are older. We are seasoned, Elliot and I, and we've married these younger spouses.
This is your former husband.
Yes, Elliot, played by Jeff Cornell, is my former husband. And so we end up marrying these younger spouses. We're older, but I wouldn't say we hit any marks on the maturity scale. I think that we're really quite childish. It's fun to play a play like this. I mean, these people have no jobs; they just live, you know. And
these are British people of the aristocracy. Is that right? Or they where do they come from?
Yeah, they're landed. I mean, you know, they're in a chain of.
I think Downton Abbey is that?
Yeah, probably. They're not lords, you know, or ladies, but they're certainly run in that kind of social circle. In the 30s, things were changing too, as well.
Uh-huh. I mean, are you all going to dress up like those Downton Abbey people do?
Well, it won't be Downton Abbey. It's how would we describe it?
More like society and city society.
Yeah, but I think one of the great joys about doing a play that takes place in 1930 is that you get to see the outfits, you get to see what the hair looks like, you really get to be transported to that time.
All right, you've introduced Amanda, is that right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay, and now Amanda, formerly married, I say to Jeff, formerly married... Brian?
Elliot.
Mm-hmm. And so who does she marry next? And have you got that actor?
Hi, I'm Tom Coyner. She marries a man named Victor Prynn, who is about 34 or 5, you say?
Right.
And Victor's a stand-up gentleman's gentleman. He thinks that women should be pampered and taken care of and... abhors the kind of behavior that Elliot showed to Amanda when they were married before. For 3 years, you guys were married?
We were married 3 years.
Three years.
Divorced for 5.
Yeah, so Victor has come in to rescue her from, you know, what happened to her before.
And what is Victor like, and what does he see in somebody's former wife? I mean, what's the...
Well, yeah, I mean, divorce was a big deal back then, but I think he's one of those people that is naturally looking for other people who are hurt or wounded by something like that, something like a divorce or a major life event, you know, something that's scarring, and for him to be able to come in and really help that person get their life back on track. You know, he I think he finds a lot of personal value in that. And he's very proper, and so he can seem stuffy and English at the outset. And so for me, it was actually one of the challenges of him was working to kind of get under the surface of what's going on there.
Well, Amanda is attractive, though, isn't she?
Oh, yeah, sorry, yes. She's vivacious. That's the word that I think. And she's also tenacious, not to rhyme, but there's a lot. The more he knows about her, she's exciting, and then at a certain point, that becomes terrifying. Like, he knew that she was something that he had never seen before. They meet at a party. It's just like, you know, high school. He meets her at a party, and she's just so wonderful. She's unlike any woman he's ever met before in his life. And so she's the great love affair of his life. And actually, if you look at the play from his perspective, it's a tragedy. Because she... Well, I shouldn't give away the plot.
No, well, the plot is 50, 60, 70 years old.
Right. Well, Amanda and Elliot. Amanda and Elliot. Yeah, stop listening now. Amanda and Elliot get back together. Now, whether or not they are going to get back together personally, permanently, is, you can come see the play. But so there is, Victor gets left on his honeymoon. I mean, that's terrible. If you actually think about that, if that happened to me.
Well, did happen. It's happening to you.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, and I'm just like, whoa. So from his point of view, the play is a tragedy, and it also changes him significantly. It sort of like cracks him open a little bit, and we see him lose control of himself, which is, for me, really exciting.
All right, now, we've been listening to Tom talk about his character, Victor. And Victor has got to be placed up against Elliot. And Sean, you didn't bring Jeff Cornell. We know him, but you didn't bring him. So tell us about what kind of character he is, and then tell us about his new wife, and we'll hear from her.
Yeah, you know, I think the thing about Elliot and Amanda is, and I think this is what's fascinating about the play, is that they're so great when they're together, and that they burn so hot when they're together, that it's always unsustainable, that they just kind of devour each other, that they really can't get enough of each other, and then it always seems to be on about day 4 or 5, they turn on each other, and then it goes horribly, horribly wrong.
We find out why they were attracted to each other and then why they had to break up. Is that sort of what the play was?
But less, than I think a plot point. You know, I think everybody has those relationships in their life where it was continually disastrous, and yet you come back over and over again thinking that maybe this 7th time it won't be as bad. And then, of course, it's always even worse. And so I think, kind of what's the reason I think the play still resonates and that people keep doing it is that both of the characters, Amanda and Elliot, have to make this choice in the play. Are they going to choose the kind of hot, exciting, immediate choice, or are they going to choose the more stable, solid, calming, new relationship?
Well, now, is that the kind of relationship that Jeff Cornell, as Elliot, is going to have or is having with his new wife?
Yes, so I think at the beginning of the play, he is as much talking himself into it as he is her, that he has decided that he's reached a point in his life when he doesn't want drama, he doesn't want throwing dishes, he just wants calm and quiet and naps.
And that's what Sybil is.
And that's what Sybil offers him.
Well, let her
him.
Speak for herself.
This Hello. Is,
this will be Sybil, but in real life it's Christian Minglecoat.
Hello. Yes, I play Sybil Chase, the new wife, the housewife, very much so. I keep thinking of her as a Barbie doll, just someone who has found this cool, dashing man and is significantly younger, that's talked about in the play, and just decides that she wants to be taken care of and she wants to take care of someone.
Well, now they've obviously cast a very attractive woman to play this part. Now, is she a glamour? Are you a glamour girl in your
a
role?
A bit. Again, like I keep thinking of the Barbie doll. Like everything is perfect and put in its place. I imagine her mother as someone who taught her early on to brush her hair 100 times, and everything's perfectly coiffed. Everything in its place. She talks about being very organized. So it's someone who just has an idea of what life is, as many young people do, and have no idea what's really in store for them.
Well, do you feel comfortable in this role, or is this you, or are you really having to stretch to be somebody else?
I would say I like to indulge a girly side of myself every now and then, but Sybil is not me. I am type A, so that I have in common with her.
She's a personable. She likes, she's active and likes...
I guess there are similarities. Personable. Sean mentioned, there's this charming quality to these new spouses. I hope I'm charming in life. Hope I'm charming right now. fingers crossed. But she's a little ridiculous.
What do you mean by that? She's ridiculous?
Act 3 is very fun. Sybil gets to realize what the world is actually like, and how she reacts to that is a little ridiculous.
Her world comes crashing down?
Yes, her world, her Barbie house comes crashing down, yes. And yeah, she's a ton of fun to play. She's extreme. She gets to twirl a lot. I love her, but I think I'm a little more grounded, hopefully, than she is.
Well, we're going to take a quick break. Then we're going to come back and continue our discussion with the director and the cast of the Playmaker's current production of Private Lives. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin, and I'm visiting with the director and the cast of the Playmaker's current production of Noel Coward's Private Lives. And we've had a chance to meet the characters. I want to go back to the director and tell us, from the standpoint of the director, what is this play about? And talk to us, if you will, about some of the challenges that you faced as you decided how to present it here in Chapel Hill.
You know, I think, you know, since the play is about these two couples that have split and then have the really unfortunate setup to be honeymooning next to their ex.
That's an unbelievable coincidence, isn't it?
Which none of us would want to have to go through. And then, of course, they have to decide whether they're going to get back together again. And are they, we're talking about earlier, make the choice between something exciting that...
Sean, excuse me. I was sitting here saying this would never happen. But then I'm thinking, well, it often happens where you're with a new love interest and your old love interest appears. And you know, all of the history, you want to hide it, you know, you don't, and you want to be respectful, but you, and then all of a sudden you say, no, she was really something, you know. And we have all been through something like this.
Yeah, and I think we all run into exes, and for a brief moment, it's really disconcerting because whatever, you know, language or memories that happened just between the two of you that are now gone and nobody talks about anymore suddenly comes rushing back. And then also for a brief moment, you can play out the scenarios of if I had stayed with them, maybe if I had done this better, oh my God, could my life be, especially if they've gone on to be successful.
Well, in the passage of time, all of the horrible times together and the reasons that you broke up and the stresses, they kind of fade in the background, and then you remember these wonderful moments that you had, and that they may predominate in your mind.
Yeah, and especially I think even Amanda and Elliot think of it as being a while ago. So when you talk about your relationships from your youth, it's also very charming and you're very forgiving and you think like, oh my God, they were so great and I was terrible. And so, you know, it really kind of, it shakes you a little to your core to try to really be clear about who you are and where you are. And so I think the last thing that you would want, especially I imagine Amanda and Elliot's
divorce happened very fiery and very loud and with a lot of tossing of furniture. So I think for it to have ended that way, not seen them for years and suddenly run into them on the night that they're about to start a new relationship would really make them kind of question and really, you know, even if they didn't get back together, that would be shocking and you would at least have to take a moment and kind of center yourself and pull yourself together.
Well, as you were preparing for this play, did you go back and find out why did Noel Coward write this? I mean, under what circumstances? Did he just pull it out of thin air, or did he have an experience like this, or was he just looking for a gimmick? I mean, this is kind of a gimmicky play, isn't it?
Well, and I think this is one of the challenges of the show is that to really make it great, it does have to appear to be very casual and very whimsical and very much like we like to talk about, it's like eating a cupcake and then doing a shot of champagne afterwards. It's just like
very sweet. It's
very sweet. It's very charming. And it should feel like it's, you know, slightly effortless for the actors to walk out and just toss zingers at each other for 2 hours. But I think the challenge of the show is, and I think about this a lot, there's this great Mel Brooks quote where he says, tragedy is when I cut my finger on a piece of paper, and comedy is when you walk into an open sewer and die. So the idea being that comedy is just tragedy happening to somebody else. And so for these characters, even though to the audience it feels very whimsical, to them it has to be really real. Like their wants have to be deep, their passion has to be urgent. They really have to want to connect with each other and be fearful of making the wrong choice at any given moment. And I think so we actually spend our time in rehearsal talking about things like we were working on a tragedy.
Well, so you framed it as a tragedy because it is a tragedy for the characters, but it's got to be funny or whimsical for us watching it.
I think it has to be a tragedy for them, and then the circumstances have to be so pressed together as which to make it ridiculous that we kind of laugh at it. I mean, any great comedy, even like you watch Arrested Development, you're just watching those characters suffer from scene to scene, but they're so lovable and it's so ridiculous, you know, and you can't believe it, they burned the banana stand before getting the money out, that you're just, but that's a tragedy to them. To them, like, that feels urgent, that feels a part of it. But to us, it's, you know, very silly. So I think for us, we have to always know, you know, technically how to land the jokes, how to set them up. But if ever we take it too casual, then the play kind of falls apart, and then it's just
unless,
a couple of one-liners.
So in order to sustain the comedy might not be the right word for it, but the right reaction for us in the audience, you've got to tell your actors, don't laugh at yourselves. You're in serious trouble. You've got to convey that in order for me, the audience, to capture the human comedy part of it.
Yeah, and I think for us to see ourselves on stage in the relationships of all of them, then we have to really believe that they're in the middle of it. And I think for all of us, when we think about our past relationships or past fights and stuff like that, they're terribly ridiculous. If you imagine like the fights that you had or the things you broke up on or the number of times you slammed doors and stormed out, or, you know, it's just like we all look awkward and spazzish. So it's just like I think that would be comical to anyone watching those things, even though in the moment it felt like nothing larger.
Well, it's the Schadenfreude concept of I'm really entertained by your tragedy.
Yeah, yeah.
Tom, you look like I was just gonna say
I had an acting teacher who you mentioned, DG, the audience, you know, conveying this to the audience, it's an interesting paradox because I don't think you can succeed by trying to convey is tragedy. But this acting teacher I had said that when you're on stage, your audience is the other character. If you're trying to affect anybody or make anybody change or anything like that, it's the other person. And then the audience, it's actually, you're not demanding anything of them in that situation. They're allowed to watch it and have their own response to it. And then if they want to come into the conversation and have a dialogue, like by laughing at something, then they're welcome to.
Well, how does I'm very interested in that concept, and how does that translate into your approach to your role as the new husband whose new wife gets stolen by her old husband?
Well, it's probably it's safe to say it's the most confusing thing that's ever happened to him in his life, and he's completely befuddled by it. And so he spends the rest of the play I said once that he's like Columbo. He spends the rest of the play trying to figure out he tries to get to the bottom of this mystery. So for me, that's really fun to play. So even though the other paradox is, even though he's in dire straits and in a tragedy, I'm loving playing him because it's so fun to be desperately trying to figure something out like this.
Well, we're visiting with the director and the cast of the Playmakers' current production of Private Lives. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. The Playmakers' current production is Noel Coward's Private Lives. It's about an interesting story about a divorced couple finds new spouses, goes on honeymoon, and they find out that they're in adjoining rooms. And so the director of this story, Sean, you've told us a little bit about it. Can I persuade you to get some of your actors to maybe do a scene?
Sure. And you don't really set have it to up persuade for? Them. Yeah.
Would you set it up
act
for
just
us?
The and drop of a dime. Yeah.
Sean Daniels is the director.
Yeah. So this is Amanda and Victor. This is the opening scene of the show. The first time we meet them. At first, we meet the two couples on their honeymoon, thinking it's going to go great, before they discover who's in the suite next door. So this is, they've just arrived, they've dropped off their bags, and they're ready to enjoy their honeymoon.
I shall catch pneumonia. That's what I shall catch.
God.
I beg your pardon?
You look wonderful.
Thank you, darling.
Like a beautiful advertisement for something.
Nothing peculiar, I hope.
I can hardly believe it's true. You and I here alone together, married.
That stuff's very rough.
Don't you like it?
It's a bit hearty, isn't it?
Do you love me?
Of course. That's why I'm here.
More than you loved...
Now then, none of that.
No, but do you love me more than you loved Elliot?
I don't remember. It's such a long time ago.
Not so very long.
All my life ago.
I'd like to break his damn neck.
Why?
For making you unhappy.
It was mutual.
Rubbish. It was all his fault. You know it was.
Yes, it was, now I come to think about it.
Swine.
Oh, don't be so vehement, darling.
I'll never treat you like that.
That's right.
I love you too much.
So did he.
Fine sort of love that is. He struck you once, didn't he?
More than once.
Where?
Several places.
What a cad.
I struck him, too. Once I broke 4 gramophone records over his head. It was very satisfying.
You must have been driven to distraction.
Oh, yes, I was, but don't let's talk about it, please. After all, it's a dreary subject for our honeymoon night.
He didn't know when he was well off.
Look at the lights of that yacht reflected in the water. I wonder whose it is.
We must bathe tomorrow.
Oh, yes. I want to get a nice sunburn.
Mandy.
Why? What's the matter?
I hate sunburnt women.
Why?
It's somehow, well, unsuitable.
It's awfully suitable to me, darling.
Of course, if you really want to.
I'm absolutely determined. I've got masses of lovely oil to rub all over myself.
Your skin is so beautiful as it is.
Wait and see. When I'm done a nice crisp brown, you'll fall in love with me all over again.
I couldn't love you more than I do now.
Oh, dear. I did so hope our honeymoon was going to be progressive.
Where did you spend the last one?
Victor.
I want to know.
San Moritz. It was very attractive.
I hate San Moritz.
So do I.
Did he start quarreling with you right away?
Within the first few days, I put it down to the high altitudes.
And you loved him?
Yes, Victor.
You poor child.
You must try not to be pompous, dear.
Mandy.
I don't believe I'm a bit like what you think I am.
How do you mean?
I was never a poor child.
A figure of speech, dear, that's all.
I suffered a good deal and had my heart broken, but it wasn't an innocent girlish heart. It was jagged with sophistication. I've always been sophisticated, far too knowing. That's what caused many of my rows with Elliot. It irritated him because he knew I could see through him.
I don't mind how much you see through me.
Sweet.
I'm going to make you happy.
Are you?
Yes, just by looking after you and seeing that you're all right, you know?
No, I don't know.
I think you love me quite differently from the way you loved Elliot.
Do stop harping on Elliot!
It's true, though, isn't it?
I love you in much more calmly, if that's what you mean.
More lastingly?
I expect so.
Do you remember when I first met you?
Oh, yes. Distinct. distinctly.
At Marion Vale's party?
Yes.
Wasn't it wonderful?
Not really, dear. It was only redeemed from the completely commonplace by the fact of my having hiccups.
I never noticed them.
Love at first sight.
Where did you first meet Elliot?
To hell with Elliot!
Mandy!
I forbid you to mention his name again. I'm sick of the sound of it. You must be raving mad. Here we are on the first night of our honeymoon with the moon coming up and the music playing, and all you can do is talk about my first husband. It's downright sacrilegious.
Don't be angry.
But it's very annoying.
Will you forgive me?
Yes. Only don't do it again.
I promise.
You better dress now. You haven't bathed yet.
Where shall we dine? Downstairs here or at the casino?
The casino's more fun, I think.
We can play Boole afterwards.
Oh, no, we can't, dear.
Don't you like dear old Boole?
No, I hate dear old Boole. We'll have a nice game of chemin de fer.
You're not at the big table.
Maybe at the biggest table.
You're not a terrible gambler, are you?
Inveterate. Chance rules my life.
What nonsense.
Oh, how can you say it's nonsense? It was chance meeting you. It was chance falling in love. It's chance we're here, particularly after your driving. Everything that happens is chance.
No, I feel rather scared of you at close quarters.
That promises to be very embarrassing.
You're somehow different now. Wilder than I thought you were. More strained.
Wilder? Oh, Victor, I've never felt less wild in my life. A little strained, I grant you. But that's the newly married atmosphere. You can't expect anything else. Honeymooning is a very overrated amusement.
You say that because you had a ghastly experience before.
There you go again!
It can't have failed to embitter you a little.
The honeymoon wasn't such a ghastly experience, really. It was afterwards it was so awful.
I intend to make you forget it all entirely.
Well, you won't succeed by making constant references to it.
I wish I knew you better.
It's just as well you don't. The woman, in italics, should always retain a certain amount of alluring feminine mystery for the man, also in italics.
And what about the man? Isn't he allowed to have any mystery?
Absolutely none, transparent as glass.
Oh, I see.
Never mind, dear. Doesn't necessarily work out that way. It's only supposed to.
I'm glad I'm normal.
What an odd thing to be glad about. Why?
Well, aren't you?
I'm not so sure I'm normal.
Oh, Mandy, of course you are. Sweetly, divinely normal.
Well, I haven't any peculiar cravings for Chinamen or old boots, if that's what you mean.
Mandy?
Well, I think very few people are completely normal, really, deep down in their private lives. It all depends on a combination of circumstances. If all the various cosmic thingamies fuse at the same moment and the right spark is struck, there's no knowing what one mightn't do. That was the trouble with Elliot and me. We were like two violent acids bubbling about in a nasty little matrimonial bottle.
I don't believe you're nearly as complex as you think you are.
I don't think I'm particularly complex, but I know I'm unreliable.
You're frightening me horribly. In what way unreliable?
I'm so apt to see things the wrong way round.
What sort of things?
Morals, what one should do and what one shouldn't.
Darling, you're so sweet.
Thank you, Victor. That's most encouraging. You really must have your bath now. Go along.
Kiss me.
There, dear. Now, hurry now.
Give me 10 minutes.
I'll bring the cocktails out here when they come.
All right.
Well,
that's the scene.
Yeah. Sean, what's happened? Now, if just for those who are listening who joined us maybe a little bit late in the middle, eavesdropping on a conversation between a newly married couple on honeymoon, talking about one of the exes, this was made me want to learn more about these people. Sean Daniel, you're the director of this production. Where does this fit?
So this is a couple on their honeymoon. And, you know, honeymooning is very different in 1930 than it would be in 2014. So they actually maybe don't know each other tremendously.
It's clear from the conversation they hardly know each other at all.
Yeah, so. You know, they haven't had sex at this point. They've maybe gone on a series of dates and met some of their friends. So it's really like the honeymoon is their first chance to really be alone, be together for an extended period of time and kind of get to know each other and hope that it works out between the two of them.
We see some signals that there might be some challenges in their upcoming relationship.
That's right. So they're kind of navigating how to be charming and then also find out about each other and figure out what they're into and those kind of things. So, but they're definitely attracted to each other. But yeah, you know, it's what we would think of maybe as like a great third date where you're really just trying to figure out, are there red flags? Oh my God, there's a lot of red flags. Okay, how do I navigate these?
And the whole scene introduces the absent first husband of Mandy's first husband.
Yeah, that regardless of how much they say that they're not going to talk about it.
He keeps coming up.
They talk about it over and over again.
So have we been introduced to him earlier in the play?
This is the second scene of the play. Mm-hmm. And in the first scene, we saw him going through a similar conversation with his young wife, where she kept wanting to know, because I think also if it's the first time that you've really spent some time alone with your partner, a lot you want to ask is like, who were your exes? Did it go horribly wrong? You know, who is your ex-husband or ex-wife? So I think for the new couple, they finally kind of have permission to ask all these questions. So they're trying to navigate how to find out, you know, what was their past like without seeming too obsessive about it, but also wanting to know these things before they consummate their marriage that night.
Well Tom seems overly obsessive about it. He can't not get the first husband off his mind.
Yeah, Noel Coward has a neat little trick. He uses my insecurity to do his exposition for him.
So it's a narrative of where we've come from, that Tom's questions and suppositions help the audience figure out
what's happening. Yeah, since he's, as we said, getting down to the bottom of things, he's also got to do that with Elliot. You know, really figure out what went wrong before so he can make sure not to let that happen to her again.
But now he says he hates Elliot.
Yeah, he does. He's never met him. Obviously, he's never met him. But you can imagine his picture of Elliot he's got in his head. I mean, he's a rake and he is a spouse abuser, you know, and a drunkard. I mean, he has all these things that are
wrong.
He's
gotten a one-sided look from the first wife.
Oh, yeah, black and white all the way, you know. I mean, he's 100% sure that Elliot's the devil.
Well, when you hear stories of your partner's ex, right, they're usually terrible.
They're the worst people in the world.
That's right, yeah. So you finally meet them and you find out that they're, like, just human beings. Yeah, you're like, oh, that doesn't go with the story.
Yeah, it's jarring.
Yeah.
We're talking about Private Lives, which is the Playmaker's current production. Talking to the director and the cast, and we'll be right back after this short break. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. We're talking about the Playmaker's current production of Noel Coward's Private Lives. And we got the cast and the director to talk to us about it. Anyway, I had so much fun in the prior scene hearing these actors do a great scene, so I'm asking them to try the whole thing again. And Sean Daniel, you're the director of this production. Can you set up another scene for me?
Sure. So this is a shorter scene. This is in Act 3 when all chaos is broken loose. So if in Act 1 we meet the two couples, and Act 2 our original couple decides to run off and take another shot at it, in Act 3 all three couples come back together kind of destroy the place that they're in and try to figure out who is going to leave with who at the end act.
The conversation, introduce the players in this conversation.
So this is where our two ladies have gone off to the other room, I guess to let the gentlemen fight for a brief moment and to begin to try to figure out to get their story straight. And they've come back in to see if Victor has beaten up Elliot. Because when they left, they were almost blows. They were ready to punch each other. So they're kind of coming back into the room to see if one of them is knocked out, to see if there's blood everywhere, to see if both of them have knocked themselves out. Because there's a constant kind of chess game going on in terms of who gets who or, you know, which couple is going to end up on top.
Okay, so we've got Julie Fischel, whom we know pretty well, in the role of Amanda, I call her the first wife, I guess that's right, and now married to somebody else. And then we've got Tom Coyner playing the role of Victor, who's her new husband. And then we have Kristen Mingelkow, who's playing Sybil, who is the first wife.
The new wife.
Who's married her first husband, and she's the second wife. Elliot. Elliot's not
perfect.
Here, but the conversation among these three.
So, yes.
Great.
Well, what's happened? Nothing's happened.
You ought to be ashamed to admit it.
Where's Elliot?
In there.
What's he doing?
How do I know what he's doing?
If you were half the man I thought you were, he'd be in there bandaging himself.
Elliot's just as strong as Victor.
I should like it proved.
There's no need to be so vindictive.
You were abusing Elliot to me like a pickpocket a little while ago. Now you're standing up for him.
I'm beginning to suspect he wasn't quite so much to blame as I thought.
Oh, really?
You certainly have a very unpleasant temper.
It's a little difficult to keep up with your rapid changes of front. But you're young and inexperienced, so I forgive you freely.
Seeing the depths of degradation to which age and experience have brought you, I'm glad I'm as I am.
That was exceedingly rude. I think you better go away somewhere.
After all, Elliot is my husband.
But take him with you, by all means.
If you're not very careful, I will. Elliot! Elliot! Let me in. Please, please let me in. I want to speak to you.
Oh, heaven preserve me from nice women.
Your own reputation ought to do that.
Oh, go to hell!
Well, that's the scene there.
So, how far, then how's it going to work out? What's going to happen?
Oh, can't I tell you that.
Yeah, you can. Yeah.
Different ending every night.
Well, right, the audience votes.
Well, does Elliot appear in this scene? Does he come in? Can you take up for him? Is he beaten up? Is he, what's the deal?
I don't know, Tom. Do you beat him up?
In a battle of wits, Victor is unarmed. So Elliot renegotiates the terms of the fight. Victor wants it to be a boxing match, and Elliot turns it into an intellectual discussion. And then really hits Victor to the heart, which, you know, he asks him the question, which does Victor still love Amanda? And so that stops him dead in his tracks, you know.
Well, Sean, talk a little bit. We just got a minute or two left. Talk about the development of this play and your working with your cast to make it right. And how did you finally get it to be good enough so you're comfortable leaving them to do it?
Well, one of the things that we really wanted to do was to create an environment for the play that really transports the audience into that kind of 1930s feel. So when you come to see the show, when you first walk in, we've really set it up to be a supper club so that there's tables around the stage where people are able, if they want to pay, can sit down and get drinks and snacks beforehand. There's a live piano player who does plays throughout the entire show. All the waiters are dressed in 1930s gear so that you really get the idea that you've stepped into something and that we've kind of won you over, hopefully even before the play begins.
Now, how'd you come up with that? Is this the director? Is this somebody imposed this idea on you? Or
no, this was me and the design team trying to figure out what was the best way to tell the story. And we thought really the best way is to try to just recreate what it would have been like to see it for the first time. What did it feel like when this was a new play and people were coming in to try to see?
So you're taking us not only into the play that Noel Coward wrote, but you want to take us back to the 1930s and so that we are watching it as if we were...
I think that's the joy of pieces like that we really get to find out, like, oh, you know, in the 1930s, people couldn't figure out how to be in relationships either. And that really helps us right now to be like,
this is a different way. We're handicapped in a different way.
That's right. We're still struggling with the exact same things. And it feels, though, like this conversation could be going on amongst two couples today. So I think that's one of the great things of a piece of theater like this, that you realize these same conversations, we have yet to come up with the correct answer for how to deal with each other.
Well, I wondered, as I heard these people both talking about the play and then acting pieces of it, whether or not in your collaborative direction of them, you asked them to imagine different scenes in their own lives to prepare themselves, or you just said, here's a script, let's just do it?
No, I think we talk about, at the very first rehearsal, we went around the room and everybody had to tell a disastrous story from their past. And what was amazing was everybody would tell a story and kind of frame it like, you know, it wasn't really that bad, but this was kind of weird. And then as you listened to everyone else's story, you were like, why did you stay in that relationship? It sounds insane. So everybody else's story sounded bizarre and disastrous and comical.
Your own
seemed like it almost worked out. It really, yeah, except for a couple of things, it really almost came together.
And that in the reconstruction of those kinds of things with your actors, you'd say, I'm glad I had the experience. I almost wish that it had worked out, but I'm not mourning it in the way that I might have the disaster that happened. I can look back at it and reflect on it a little bit.
Yeah, you can write off your past on your taxes once you use it for a show. So it's great to be able to go back and do it.
Well, we're out of time, but what a wonderful conversation. And thanks to you all. You gave us a free preview of this wonderful play. Makes us want to all see it again. Thanks very much.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thanks to you for listening. This is D.G. Martin, who's talking. And I'll be back here before you know it.